Literally.
Call the House Committee on Health Care to order for this lovely March 6th and announce that we are going to reschedule a work session on House Bill 2465. We have an amendment that's just come in, and we will be getting back on schedule when we get the amendment.
2465?
So, mm-hmm. 2465. We will be rescheduling. We have three bills that relate to drug take-back. I'm going to open the public hearing on two of them, and when we finish that, have an informational on the third one, which it'll be an informational anyway. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2386 and House Bill 2645 and ask Madam Administrator to talk to us about them.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2386 and 2645 direct each manufacturer of certain types of drugs that are sold within the state to develop and implement a drug take-back program for the purpose of collecting from individuals and non-business entities those types of drugs for disposal. It directs the State Board of Pharmacy to administer the act. They both have subsequent referrals to Ways and Means, Mr. Chair, but at this point we don't have a fiscal or a revenue statement on the bill, and we have 2386 is brought to you at the request of Representative, at the Association for Oregon Counties, and 20, do I have that backwards?
No.
And 2645 is Representative Malmstrom's bill, but they are identical in their content. So.
Can we ask Representative Malmstrom to begin the discussion about it?
And there are several other people that would like to join her at the table, Mr. Chair.
Well, she can handle it all by herself, and then we'll bring the other people along.
Okay. Check.
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair's Nose in Hayden, and colleagues. My name for the record is Representative Sherry Malmstrom. I'm here to discuss HB 2645 and HB 2386, and these will not be the final versions of these bills, but they're part of a larger conversation about the opioid crisis and the stress that it puts on public health, corrections, law enforcement, and our natural resources in Oregon. We've had two work groups so far with various stakeholders, which included pharmacists, doctors, drug manufacturers, and advocates. And while the current version of the bill is not ready to advance to the floor, I hope that this public hearing is part of a conversation and that it provides some insight into the work that many of us have put in so far and demonstrates that we are on the right track. Unused drugs kept in medicine cabinets, tossed in the garbage, flushed down the toilet or down the drain, can pose serious threats to human and environmental health. Drugs of concern are controlled as well as non-controlled prescription drugs and over-the-counter medications. Drug take-back programs, government or industry programs where unused drugs are returned to designated sources, reduce avoidable poisoning of both children and adults, prevent intentional misuse of unwanted prescription drugs, especially by teenagers, and protect water quality, fish, and other aquatic species. Some of these unwanted and unused prescription drugs reach Oregon's environment. However, studies show that because of inadequate disposal options, most people either throw away or flush them down the toilet or dispose them in the household trash. While these were once considered the best methods of disposal, we now know that this can lead to unadvisable adverse effects on our drinking water and create unintended poisonings or abuse.
Another facet of this issue is the opioid crisis in the United States. According to the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, 4 out of 5 new heroin users started with prescription painkillers, and 4 million out of the 6.4 million Americans who were documented abusing controlled prescription drugs obtained their drugs from friends and families, often from their home medicine cabinets. The National Institute on Drug Abuse provides additional context. We know that individuals that abuse opioid prescriptions are 19 times more likely to become addicted to heroin. While a drug take-back program will not remove all unneeded opioids from circulation, it is a crucial step in combating this public health crisis. Leftover drugs can result in the unintentional use of wrong or expired prescription of people of all ages, poisoning children who get access to drugs, and poisoning of children and pets who find them discarded in the trash. According to the Center for Disease Control, this leads to as many as 1,000 people a day in the United States being treated for improper use of prescription drugs. More locally, data from 2014 showed that 87% of adolescent fatalities managed by OHSU's Poison Center were linked to prescription drugs, while in 2015 there were over 100 deaths by overdose statewide. And most recently, in just January and February of this year alone, there were 256 opioid-related calls to the Oregon Control Center. Many pharmaceuticals and their byproducts have been detected in waters, and new technology is capable of detecting low concentrations of chemical waste, including small amounts of pharmaceuticals. These studies show municipal wastewater treatment facilities do not remove some of the pharmaceutical waste and their byproducts. As a way to combat the negative effect that drugs can have in our wastewater systems, the EPA, along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the American Pharmacists Association and the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, are continuing to encourage communities to participate in a drug take-back program. In conclusion, while we haven't arrived at a final version of this bill yet, the task is one of great importance with far-reaching consequences. During our work group stakeholders meeting, there has been legitimate concerns brought forward by all sides, and I hope that as we continue to work together, we can develop amendments and make this a consensus bill. That said, at the end of the day, we, as a legislative body, must take proper steps to address this public health crisis. And in the end, any decision not to act is a decision to let this crisis and problem continue to grow. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Would you call the next panel, please? Thank you very much, Representative.
Mark Nystrom, Tracy Rattan, and Dr. Dannenhofer.
Chair Greenlee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Bob Dannenhofer. I'm a pediatrician and a Douglas County public health officer. The drug take-back is an important thing. We know that people are frequently prescribed drugs that they don't finish or use, most notably narcotics, where people get typically far more narcotics after a minor procedure than they need, and then those narcotics stay at home. In addition, there are antibiotics that are changed and stay in that home cabinet, and other medicines for which people have had adverse reactions that stay in the drug cabinets. These medicines, the drug cabinets, cause all kinds of problems. We heard about the overdoses, but we also hear then about the use of antibiotics just to finish them up the next time you have a cold or something, which leads to antibiotic misuse and drug resistance. In addition, we have many seniors who come in with a bag full of drugs, not knowing which drugs they should be on and which drugs they should continue. So already we have programs to have drug take back. We have one at the sheriff's office, and although that has been pretty well accepted, there are going to be a lot of people who will be a little reluctant to go to the sheriff's office to drop off their drugs. And we do community take back events, and while those community take back events are okay, they take a tremendous amount of planning, and they're not particularly convenient. I've told people that if you had to take your cans back once a year to one place, we probably wouldn't take very many cans back either. So there is an option in small small town, Canyonville, the Canyonville pharmacist has started a drug take-back program. It's fully compliant with the DEA. It costs him only a few hundred dollars a year, and he wonders why everybody doesn't do this. He's not willing to do this for the whole county, obviously, but it's a program which is relatively easy for him to administer and costs less than $1,000 a year for his pharmacy. I think with this, it shows that this could be expanded to all of the retail pharmacies in the state. And then the adage would be, if you don't need your drug, take it back where you bought it, and you can bring it back and then have only the drugs in your drug cabinet that you truly need. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. For the record, Tracy Rutten with the League of Oregon Cities. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 2386 and House Bill 2645. I'd like to also extend my appreciation to Representative Malmstrom and her staff for their work on this legislation and for their efforts to bring interested parties around the same table to talk about a potential path forward on this legislation. The League of Oregon Cities has historically been and continues to be extremely interested in the possibility of establishing a statewide drug take-back program that can provide Oregonians with enhanced access to opportunities to responsibly dispose of unused and unwanted prescription medications. Local governments have long provided opportunities for prescription drug take-back because we see it as a critical service that can help save lives. According to the most recent data published by the Oregon Health Authority and on their website, Oregon currently has 84 current drug take-back locations. All except for 6 or 7 of those are currently being operated through our local government public safety system. Most drug take-back locations exist in police department lobbies or sheriff's offices. And while we're certainly supportive of these services through our public safety system, as they for a long time have been one of the only avenues to provide prescription drug take-back, due to the federal rules of the DEA, relying solely on local government public safety services has presented challenges. It challenges our local government budgets, which are already constrained, and it does not provide for adequate access, as the majority of these public safety locations are only able to offer access to take-back opportunities during their regular hours, which are typically Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. till 4 or 5 p.m. The current system is just not convenient for the Oregonians who are not able to or wanting to drive to a police station in the middle of the work week. In addition, many people are not aware of drug take-back locations, as police department lobbies typically do not see a lot of foot traffic. And therefore, we have a system that does not offer very much visibility or exposure for the existing take-back opportunities that we have. We were really encouraged in 2014 to see the federal DEA rules change, something that was long awaited by many of our members. As I mentioned, prior to that rule change, there were very extensive barriers that existed, which resulted in a system that had to rely very heavily on our law enforcement system. This posed significant challenges, as there were limited resources and opportunities to take discarded prescriptions, especially from your long-term care types of facilities and hospice facilities. We simply could not afford, as local government law enforcement, to have our police officers driving to those types of locations to pick up the larger quantities of unused medications that often exist in those types of facilities. These new rules provide us with an immense opportunity that we as a state should absolutely be taking advantage of. In terms of statewide program and providing funding that's needed to administer a program, I would strongly urge the committee to forward a concept that includes funding for the transportation and the ultimate disposal, which is typically incineration, of discarded medications. Should an enhanced program be established, education of Oregonians on where to find the take-back locations is also incredibly important. I also want to note that we do approach this issue from the perspective of our wastewater providers. Our current wastewater treatment processes are not able to remove pharmaceuticals, and they do end up entering our waterways. And yes, it is true that medications will still pass naturally through the human system, as only a portion of medications are absorbed when taken. We know that this is not going to solve the issue entirely, but what we absolutely want to prevent is the flushing of medications down toilets, which we know for a long time has been a problem. For this reason, our municipal wastewater providers have for many years been one of the strongest voices for educating the public on drug take-back opportunities. You will find on the Oregon Health Authority website that the list of existing take-back locations is maintained by the Association of Clean Water Agencies, which represents local wastewater providers in our state. Certainly, Oregonians can try to dispose of medications by throwing them away, but in order to do so safely, they should be crushing them up and mixing them with kitty litter or another substance in order to ensure that they do not get in the wrong hands. And I know that many Oregonians just simply don't have the time to crush up all of the pills and do it the right way. So we believe that opening up the opportunity to easy and very visible access to drug take-back locations is the right step forward that we need to take as a state. I will just leave with a couple of statistics, if you will, from the National Governors Association in a 2002 issue brief that was developed as a year-long bipartisan effort. The Policy Academy had convened together a group of leading researchers, practitioners, and other industry experts to identify key recommendations. And one of the six recommendations that they issued was to ensure the proper disposal of prescription drugs. The issue brief noted that a majority of people who abuse or misuse prescription drugs get them from friends or family, and those mainly being from those that are left over and in medicine cabinets. The issue brief also noted the economic cost associated with prescription drug abuse. And I wanted to note the cost because it's something that we had spoke with to Representative Alonzo Leon about. A 2011 study estimated total cost for non-medical use of prescription opioids was $53.4 billion. Of that, $42 billion was attributable to lost productivity, $8.2 billion to criminal justice costs, $2.2 billion to drug abuse treatment, and $944 million to medical complications. And we know those numbers have gotten worse in those years since that information was released. So with that, I'll close. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I'm sitting in front of you to try to explain how this program would actually work. Oh, Mark Nystrom, Association of Oregon Counties. Thank you. So I want to look at it from a couple of different perspectives. First of all, from the perspective of a consumer. When you go to the pharmacy as a consumer, if this program were enacted, you would see a little blue kiosk next to your pharmacist window, and you'd be able to take your drugs back and put them back into the return container. That's all there is to
I'm
it.
I'm not sure the specifics have been determined yet. Is that right? You have some.
Sure. This is as we envision it.
Hypothetical.
Your version of it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I know there's a work group working on it. So
yeah. This is our, okay.
Having a detailed explanation of what the work group is going to produce is a little bit problematic.
Sure. Okay. Let me qualify it then for you. Yeah, sure. I'll qualify it for you. So this is the vision as the Association of Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities have worked together, and it's a vision rather than a reality at this point. The legislation does not say this. It's a work in progress, and we're continuing to work towards these goals. How's that?
Good.
Okay, thank you. So our vision would be to see take-back containers at these various pharmacies, and so that as a consumer you would have an opportunity to just return your medications where you buy them. And so try to make it as simple as possible. The pharmacists, in our vision, would have to find space for this box. It's about a 2-foot by 3-foot box. Looks like a mailbox, kind of. There's plenty of pictures out there on what they're using in California and Washington at this time. For the pharmaceutical industry, they would have the complicated part. They would have the part of coming together, determining a plan, a program, coordinating with one another, and in our vision, they would be paying for the kiosks to be put into those pharmacies. They would be paying for the transportation and disposal of those medications, and they would be providing education and outreach materials. So for state government, in the way the legislation is written right now, it puts a lot of the onus on the Board of Pharmacy. We sat down and talked to OHA, the Board of Pharmacy, and DEQ. And in those conversations, we decided that it would be better for the Department of Environmental Quality to oversee the program or the plan and be the ones that would be doing the auditing of the actual plan and approving of the plan. Board of Pharmacy would help DEQ in identifying the potential participants in that plan. So they would work together and move forward on that plan. For local government, those who've been hosting these sites, they could continue to host the sites. They could either do what they're doing right now, or they could participate in the plan, and that would be up to the local government. Again, all of this is in our vision, and what we hope to see House Bill 2386 or 2645 look like.
Great, thank you.
Can I have another minute? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, okay, good.
You sounded done.
Yeah, no, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the concerns that have been raised, and I want to address those really quickly. One of the concerns that we've heard is that the legislation is really complicated. What we're trying to do in this legislation is set out the sideboards and goals. And so sometimes that is complicated and that's sometimes difficult, but we really want to make sure that the pharmaceutical industry, the agencies, and the pharmacies all know what the rules are. There's also been some questions about why industry should pay for it. For years, local government, that's police, sheriff, fire departments, public health departments, mental health departments, clean water agencies, have been paying for this. State government and society in general have all been paying for these problems. We think it's time that that industry step up and take part of that and pay for part of that that cost. Right now, industry is making about $3.1 billion in sales in Oregon alone. That was in 2015, and we really believe that this would be a tiny fraction of that. We've heard that it's more important to be, that this is more about education. We would argue that it's more about convenience. It's really difficult to get people to do the right thing. I have a master's degree in environmental education, and my thesis was all about trying to get people to do the right thing. And in fact, it's just so difficult for people to get out of their way, get out of their daily routine, and go to a police department or a hospital to make these kind of returns. We're going to need to make it as simple as possible. This is backed up by data from Bellingham, Washington. Bellingham's a town of 83,000. They started a pilot program with five participating pharmacies. In the last 5 years, they've collected 13,819 pounds. Meanwhile, their police department, which still has their kiosk, has collected 537. So it's 13,000 versus 537. San Francisco, in the last 5 years, they have 12 pharmacy locations and 10 police stations. In that time, they've collected 80,437 pounds at those pharmacy kiosks. They've only collected 4,000 at the law enforcement. So it's 4.8%. So here in Marion County, I wanted to see what we do. We have 323,000 people in this town, or in this county. Over the last 5 years, they've collected 3,263 pounds. Most of those are at special events. On average, they collect 60 to 80 pounds a year. So when you look at those, comparing those numbers to a town as small as Bellingham, Washington, they're collecting multiple times more when they have pharmacies involved. So there's also been the statement that this is unrealistic. There's at least eight countries around the world that already have these programs. They've been in place for the last 15 years. California and Washington, they have counties. There's eight counties in California, four in Washington. Covers over 10 million people, and those programs are moving forward. There's been seven states that have introduced legislation, including Oregon, over the last 7 years. And so this thing's happening, it's moving forward, and it's something that we can do.
I'll stop. It sounds like you're finished now.
Yeah, thank you.
Are there any questions to this panel? You call the next panel. We have nine more people to testify on these bills. I'd like to ask the rest of you to be as brief as you can, please.
John Teague, Dwight Holton, and Rebecca Wood.
Let me clarify what I said before. As brief as you can be, but make sure you say what you need to say. Any orders, just
sure.
Remember to introduce yourself.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is John Teague. I'm the Chief of Police of the City of Kaiser. I'm also on the board of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, and my comments are going to be short, and I'll tell you why, because I was all proud of my 500 pounds a year that I was gathering, and now I'm hearing that there's a...
I was thinking that's pretty good.
That's pretty good, but I was hearing there's much more effective means of doing that, and I don't have to fool with these kiosks either. That said, let me tell you this. You know that Narcotics addictions is a growing problem in the United States, and no small part of that is, I'll say, the abuse and I'll add the overprescription of opioids. Some years ago, I attended a prescription drug summit here in Salem. That was a summit for physicians, and I happened to be the only cop in the room. And they were stating over and again that opioids are overprescribed. And one of the consequences is a mild addiction, sometimes leading to a serious addiction, and pills left languishing in the medicine cabinet. Even though I only collect a few hundred pounds a year, I'll tell you this program is popular with the public. Sometimes we have people standing three deep to drop their pills and other medicines off. I'm enthused about what I heard with the numbers with the kiosks in the pharmacies, and I encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Senate, we have a bill we're considering to limit the prescribing of opioids to deal with the first problem you raised. It's a serious problem.
Chair Greenlee, I heard that's important. Thank you.
Yes, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is Dwight Holton. I'm here in my capacity both as CEO of Lines for Life, but also as the chair of the Oregon Coalition for the Responsible Use of Meds. As I think many of you know, we've been conducting summits around the state in close collaboration with the Governor's Office and Oregon Health Authority to develop regional action plans to address the opioid crisis. 280 million pills. Every year in Oregon, 280 million pills of opioids are prescribed. If you assume just a small fraction, say 25% of those are left over, a number I think folks would be comfortable with because we all know this anecdotally, we're talking about 70 million new opioid pills left in our medicine cabinets every year, and they accumulate, of course, because we don't know what to do with them. We know this from personal perspective, too, right? Who hasn't had a surgery that's left a couple of Vicodin in the cabinet at a minimum? We also know that these pills pose a significant risk. Over 75% of the people who become dependent on opioids report that they started with a pill from a friend or a family member. In other words, a pill out of a medicine cabinet. We have a tremendous problem and a tremendous risk that's fueling this crisis that's killing about 300 people a year in Oregon and creating all sorts of costs down the system. The good news is that there is a simple, straightforward way to make proper disposal of opioids the norm rather than the exception. Several years ago, the DEA changed the law, the Congress changed the law, DEA changed the rules to enable pharmacies to become take-back locations for disposal of opioids. I urge you to adopt a opioid collection, a pharmaceutical collection program that meets this simple standard. Is it as easy to get rid of your opioids as it is to get them, right? And that means we ought to have disposal kiosk at every pharmacy, every retail pharmacy open to the public in the state. That does not have to be complicated. There are, in fact, contract systems available for this. The Sharps Company, which collects needles from companies, offers a service. This is what it looks like. As Mark, Mr. Knightson, Mr. Mistrom, it looks like a mailbox for between $1,000 and $2,000 a year. The Sharps Company, there's another company that does it as well, will put one of these in a pharmacy, and they send the pharmacy cardboard boxes, and when the box is full, the pharmacist takes the box out, seals it up, hands it to the UPS guy, who then sends it off to the company to be incinerated, all for that $1,000 to $2,000 a year cost. So this does not have to be complicated. It does not have to be expensive. There are 600 retail pharmacies in the state. Some of them are not open to the public, so a smaller subset of that. But let's call it 600 times 2,000, the maximum cost that Sharp says the cost. That's $1.2 million. 280 million pills a year, penny a pill, $2.8 million. You got money left over. So this does not seem complicated to me. Whether it's done through this system or another, I urge the committee to adopt a disposal system that meets that simple standard. Is it as easy to get rid of your pills as it is to get them? Happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Rep. Ula?
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Who, and either one of you can take it, who, if it's going to be in every retail pharmacy, who would enforce compliance in every pharmacy in Oregon? That's one part. And then the other part of the compliance I'm concerned about is there's very strict DEA regulations regards to observation and handling of these kiosks requires two pharmacists, and some pharmacies don't have that capability. So how would you handle that situation?
Want to take that on the executive chief?
Well, I'm sorry, Chair Greenlee, Representative Bueller, I can't speak to how it would occur in the pharmacies. I'm aware of those regulations as the kiosks land in police departments, and it's not terribly consequential for us. Certainly, there's an eyes on 24 hours, and I imagine in pharmacy they'll be able to work with that as well.
So the pharmacies I know that do it have not found that to be a burden, and that includes smaller town independent pharmacists who have been real leaders on this, frankly. The big box folks have had national rules that have complicated, even when they want to do it, it's made it harder for them to do. In terms of administrating it, I personally would favor beginning with a very limited footprint on administration and management, because I think that pharmacists are eager to do this if they can get the support they need in getting it paid for. So I don't think it would need to be a significant regulatory structure. And again, I come in the AOC and Representative Malmstrom have proposed an administrative structure that it combines kind of the DEQ and the pharmacy board. But I would also throw out, if you say everyone ought to do this, this is the standard, and we're going to figure out a way to make it so you don't have to, the pharmacist don't pay for it, but pharma does, we've got market-based solutions to do it.
Right. I'd like to ask a question. Does DEA have a problem with handing a UPS driver a box of known medication?
No, sir. That's part. That's consistent with regulations.
Well, that seems.
So the DEA thought long and hard about this, and the regulations provide for use of third-party carriers to take care of the drugs. And I am not aware, as your former United States attorney, I'm not aware of a single theft from any of the MedSafe or the, what's the other company, Rebecca?
Assured Waste,
who also does it in Oregon. I'm not aware of any theft or interference at all in that service.
Great. Yes.
Okay.
Go for it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Wood, and I work for Alliance for Life, and I work on disposal. I'm also a student getting my master's in social work, but I'm here today, most importantly, as somebody in recovery from opioid abuse. And thank you for the opportunity to testify in defense of this take-back bill. It's important. These are dangerous medications that we know, and I believe that they are, you know, helpful in many ways, and they are also very dangerous, which I know firsthand. I was imprisoned by addiction to these medications for years, and while addiction is a complicated issue that is not going to be solved by this bill alone, we need to address it from all sides possible. There were times in my addiction when I was, trying to get into recovery and, maybe looking in the medicine cabinet for ibuprofen, finding narcotics would be the thing that put me over the edge. And that is just not, and I take responsibility for that. And that is not something that we need. We don't want to put extra barriers to recovery in place for people. It's a hard enough thing to do anyways. Responsibly disposing of these medications needs to be simple. It needs to be easy, and it needs to be convenient, and it needs to be something that is just a matter-of-fact part of getting an opioid prescription. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
If I may add, Mr. Chairman, I am deeply proud to have Rebecca as a colleague, and I have a map of the pharmacy-based disposal that now exists in Oregon. When Rebecca started with Lines for Life, there were about two pharmacies in the state, and through her tenacity and through also excellent programs like Walgreens, which now has six pharmacies statewide, we have about 25 programs, but I'm very proud to call Rebecca a colleague.
Thank you very much. Would you call the next panel, please?
Sean Miller, Matt Marquis,
nice job,
Bill Cross.
Sisters.
Briefly, gentlemen, you may have heard you can submit written testimony.
I can probably read it. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association, the Oregon Community Pharmacy Council, which are your chain pharmacies in the state. And I just wanted to lay out at least just four items that obviously we've participated in the work group, and I know there's three different bills, and so I wanted to talk about four things that we would like to have in the bill and that we've talked openly about having in the bill. First thing, that it be a voluntary program for pharmacy participation. I think you've heard from the last panel that they want it to be mandatory. We believe it just does not work in every single retail outlet. Now, I think if you put a criterion here with a market-based solution, you will have people volunteering to make this happen. You've heard that Walgreens has already done it with their six stores in Beaverton, Gresham, Portland, Salem, Grants Pass, and Redmond. And they've done a great job about putting 500 kiosks nationally on this issue. The second thing that I'd like to point out is just making sure that we understand the regulatory framework. I know there's three different. There's you've heard that the DEQ has been mentioned, the Board of Pharmacy has been mentioned, and the Oregon Health Authority has been mentioned in one draft. And so we're trying to understand that. I know from our perspective, the Board of Pharmacy does. They're already inspecting inside our pharmacies. They it's something that they can add to their work very, we believe, easily. But you know, to go beyond that, I think it's just making sure that we draw the lines on how we deal with that regulation. The third thing I want to say is local preemption is very important. We've outlined that in the work group. It's if we're going to create a statewide program, then we do not want a patchwork approach of local city on top of that. Now, the cities and counties said they have no intention of doing that because they want it to be statewide. And so, again, we feel that they should not oppose that provision in the bill. Washington has started locally and is moving to statewide. Their bill that's moving through the legislature actually does have preemption and gives an 18-month grace, you know, pathway for some of the counties up in Washington to phase out and then comply with their statewide program. We wouldn't have to do that here because we don't have a local program already in place. And so I will say that as of now, obviously the other bills would have to be amended. Representative Buehler's bill, Section 2, Sub 1 and 2, includes that preemption. And so that's something that we would have to have. And then just last, collection box liability immunity, similar to what passed in the state of California. I haven't heard any objections to that, but that's something since we are handling these issues to make sure that we're covered with that liability immunity. So, Mr. Chair, that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Pharmacy Association and the Oregon Society of Health System Pharmacists. And we have also been involved in the coalition that's been working on development of a statewide approach to addressing the proper disposal of prescription drugs. And our organizations are supportive of that. Much like the testimony that you just heard, we have looked at the state of Washington and the state of California's programs, which are at a county level and are voluntary. And that's very important for us because not all pharmacies would be able to have a kiosk located just physically in terms of providing security in the physical space. And not all pharmacists, as I think was mentioned earlier, are in venues that would make sense from a public perspective. They're in long-term care or assisted living venues, and the public doesn't have this, you know, the same qualifications. We're also concerned about the for those that maybe physically aren't able to, you know, locate a kiosk or collection box or whatever it may be, prepaid envelopes are an alternative that might help in those limited pharmacies. We also would support the liability immunity that the state of California has offered their pharmacies for participating in the program, as well as then agree with the prior speaker on a local government preemption so that we know that statewide we have across the board standards. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis representing Pharma. While we've seen legislation like this for many sessions now in the past, you know, I've been a part of a lot of product stewardship work groups over the last 20 years as I've lobbied for many different clients. And until recently, we've never had a stakeholders conversation about this issue. And to that extent, I do want to thank Representative Malmstrom and Representative Buehler for reaching out to stakeholders to have this discussion this session. I think it's been helpful and useful to this issue. We've heard from the proponents, at least in the work group, that some feel that this might be a $3 million expense statewide. I don't know where they come up with that number, nor do I know if it includes any startup costs, which we found the startup costs, at least in the counties in California and in Washington, to be quite costly. But I do think it's a little ironic that last week, as we were talking about the cost of prescription drugs and trying to find ways to lower it, and while I can't say what would happen if this were to pass as far as what the pricing of pharmaceuticals would be, I do think that the general public would see a $3 million increase as a substantial one statewide to pharmaceuticals. A couple of things I want to mention. You know, the FDA and DEA both have recommended guidelines of how to throw away, properly dispose of pharmaceutical products. As you've heard, some of that involves crushing the medicine, wrapping it into kitty litter or coffee grounds, those types of things as part of their disposal process. And also, we had heard somebody mention about contaminants from water. I just want to briefly mention that it's been shown that most of those contaminants in water aren't from people flushing pills down the toilet, but rather through the natural process as pills that pass through our bodies with human waste. You know, as we look at other product stewardship programs across the state, and we do have several, there is one glaring difference between this and those other types of products. Those other types of products tend to have an end of life cycle. This, you know, pharmaceuticals are meant to be used in entirety. I know we're short on time, Mr. Chair. With that, I do just want to make a couple more comments. Representative Buehler's House Bill 3315 seems to be a more workable platform from our perspective. It seems to be a little simpler, less expensive to start up. The other thing I just wanted to point out, too, is that, you know, our other product stewardship programs, like paint, for instance, is paid for by the consumer at the time of checkout. There's actually most of the time a line item right on your receipt, similar to our bottle bill, which is the same way as you pay a deposit on that. However, paint is not a refundable deposit. Since our first legislation that we've seen on pharmaceutical take-back, you know, the marketplace has changed in the last 10 years. We now see a lot of hospitals with retail pharmacies that have these take-back kiosks, some retail pharmacies as well as law enforcement. And again, in our opinion, Representative Buehler's approach seems to take advantage of that nicely by encouraging those entities to look at taking kiosks. And I think in the bill it's at a 1 to 50,000 ratio of population. With that, I'll end, Mr. Chair, unless anybody has any questions, and look forward to our continued conversations on the topic.
Thank you very much. Will you call the next panel, please?
Mr. Chair, I believe this is the last panel. Michael Wish, Paul Lewis, and Elizabeth Remley.
Thank you, Chairman Greenlick and members of the committee. I'm Michael Wist with the City of Eugene's Waste Prevention Office, here to express our support for HB 2386.
What did you say your affiliation was?
I'm sorry? City of Eugene's Waste Prevention Office.
Thank you.
I'm here to express our support for HB 2386 toward the creation of a convenient and affordable system for the responsible disposal of unused medications. With approximately one-third of all purchased medicines going unused, there is real concern about the public health, safety, and environmental issues caused by this waste. Failure to dispose of unused pharmaceuticals in a timely, safe, and environmentally responsible way can lead to serious health and safety risks, including drug abuse, accidental poisonings, water pollution, and damage to aquatic life. Throughout Eugene and Lane County, a few convenient options exist for residents looking to responsibly dispose of their unused medication. Within the county, there are 7 municipally managed disposal kiosks for unused medications, only 2 of which are located in Eugene. All seven kiosks are located at law enforcement stations, with only three allowing access after normal business hours. While these kiosks perform a valuable service to our community and environment, the lack of convenience and access to these sites does little to address the scale of the problem. Our state is no stranger to creating convenient and impactful alternatives to address problems posed by dangerous waste. Our residents benefit from several producer-funded stewardship laws governing the safe disposal of products, ranging from paint to consumer electronics. Furthermore, by prescribing this proven method to deal with a harmful waste, this bill supports broader product stewardship and materials management efforts underway in Eugene and Lane County, in addition to those identified in DEQ's 2050 vision. It was King County, Washington's experience that a similar program ran at an estimated expense of about one penny for every $10 of a prescription. Those costs borne by the companies making sales, as it would be in Oregon. We feel this presents an affordable approach to a well-known method for responsibly managing dangerous waste. The key to creating new beneficial habits regarding waste is to offer people a convenient and affordable alternative. We feel HB 2386 offers this while addressing an underrated waste issue in our community. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Great. Thank you. Chair Greenlick, members of the healthcare committee. My name is Paul Lewis. I serve as the health officer for Multnomah County and the Tri-County health officer for Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties. I've also been a practicing pediatrician for 30 years, the last 21 in Oregon. I'm here in support of drug take-back in general. Most important to me, certainly as a pediatrician, is prevention of accidental poisonings. These can happen for both adults and kids. Kids don't know better. Sometimes adults do, but still accidentally are poisoned. And we're not talking about trivial numbers here. Between 2009 and 2015, we're still waiting for our final for last year, there were 1,298 deaths from opiates in our three counties. That's 737 crashing every single year after year. And interestingly, half of those deaths are prescription opioids, not heroin. So again, we can't just say, oh, yeah, maybe people get hooked on heroin from this. They're actually dying from their prescription opioids. And again, for several of the people you've heard testimony from, this is a broad topic of prescription drug take back. Many of us have a particular interest in getting the specifically dangerous opioids disposed of properly. You know, these drugs are critical for treatment of severe pain, end-of-life care, et cetera. But as you also heard earlier, they are also truly do seem to be a gateway drug to more serious injection drug use with things like heroin. There are drug take-back is just one of many possible steps we need to address the problem. People like Dwight Holton with Lines for Life and others realize that there's multiple steps that need to be taken, including safe prescribing, education of patients and the public, effective treatment both for chronic pain and for addiction. Naloxone is this group and this committee has frequently championed in the past, and as well as monitoring what's going on and whether things are working. A drug take-back is yet another a piece of this many-legged stool to prevent trouble from these drugs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Lewis.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, Elizabeth Remley here on behalf of Cambia Health Solutions today. In support of the concept of drug take-back programs funded by the pharmaceutical industry, we have a lot of really successful product stewardship programs in the state. Some are funded through a consumer fee and some are funded through manufacturers. And in both cases, what we see is depletion of these bad products in our waste stream where they should not be, and they worked really well. Cambia doesn't have any beef with any of the details. We'll let the folks work that out. We like the flexibility that the concepts provide to the manufacturers to work out their own details around how they dispose of this stuff. And finally, take back is one of several ideas in bill form related to opioid abuse that this committee is considering this session. We think that one of the best things that we can do is take a step back and look at the wholesale concept of opioid mitigation and figure out what works and what doesn't and put together a package of programs that we can pass that holistically take care of this problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill. I'm sorry, was there a question?
No.
Please, go ahead.
No.
No? Okay, I'm
no
sorry.
Question.
Just admiration.
Close the public hearing on House, House Bill 2645 and on House Bill 2386. Open a brief informational hearing on the same topic and call Representative Bueller and Dr. Hedberg to the testify, please.
Chair Greenlick, co-chairs Nose and Hayden, and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg, and I'm the state health officer with the Public Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm here to provide some information about House Bill 3315, which will establish drug take-back kiosks in retail pharmacies and hospitals. So in the last bills, you heard a lot of testimony about the scope of the problem of opioid overdose. Something that I don't think was pointed out yet is that this is actually a relatively recent problem. Since the late 1990s, we've seen a drastic increase in the number of opioid overdose deaths that has started to level off and decline slightly, but it continues to be at least threefold higher than it was 15 years ago. So it is a major problem, and we're continuing in it, although we're making inroads. Another thing to be aware is that Oregon has a dubious distinction of being somewhere in the top 1 to 5 states of people who misuse prescription opioids. So again, it's been alluded to, those are the opioids that have been prescribed to people that what they didn't take as part of their treatment for an acute injury, let's say, or post-surgery remain in the medicine cabinet, and people are using those reported for non-medicinal purposes. So addressing this epidemic, again, I think that was mentioned, there is no magic bullet. There's no one thing that will help. It requires a variety. We think about it in sort of broad categories as too many drugs in circulation, then having naloxone rescue medication for people who've overdosed, and making access to a medication-assisted treatment. In that category of too many drugs in circulation, it involves both opioid prescribing guidelines that we've been very, very involved with, and a number of tools like the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. This piece, the drug take-back, is part of that larger picture of too many drugs in circulation. So again, I think you've heard a fair amount in the previous testimony that there's a variety of strategies to help with drug take-back. So there have been we've been working together with a number of the other state agency and partners and not-for-profit to address how we can do this in the most efficient and effective manner. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Just for word of explanation, this is an informational talking about House Bill 3315, which we don't yet have in our possession, but which is coming our way. We thought this would be an opportune time to talk about it. Yeah. And we can have a very brief public hearing. Are there any questions to Dr. Hedberg?
No.
I'm sorry.
Not seeing any.
Representative Bueller?
Thank you, Chair Greenlick. Thanks for the opportunity to share my concept today. Thanks, co-chairs, and particularly thank you to Representative Malmstrom for her passion on this issue also. And I have to start off by apologizing and not having 3315 complete this topic like many that we deal with here in this building. It became much more complex and difficult as you get to the bottom of what's really going to have impact on helping reduce this horrible scourge in our state of opioid addiction. As you know from last session, we worked hard on this issue with the PDMP expansion, making it more robust, and I think that's been impactful. I've already gotten good feedback from providers that it's easier to use. And we also expanded access to naloxone, that reversal drug for opioid overdoses, which also is going quite well. the reason this problem is so important is that it's really at epidemic proportions. It is a problem that needs to come out of the shadows, and we have a particularly difficult time with it here in Oregon because we write more prescriptions per capita for narcotics in this state than almost any other state in the nation. So we have a big problem here that we need to address. I want to emphasize that I agree with almost everything that's been said here today, except for one thing, and that is that kiosks are not, they're important, but they're not a panacea. This is not going to solve the problem. This is a multifaceted approach to try to get these drugs out of our medicine cabinet and keeping it out of the environment. And so my emphasis is a little bit more in solving this problem, and it's one about public education. Because you can have all the kiosks. You could have them not only in the retail pharmacies, you could have them almost anywhere we go. But you have to convince people about the why. Why is it important to get these medications out of our homes, out of our medicine cabinets, out of the drawers, and then the appropriate way to dispose of them? And people, you know, there's a lot of lazy people out there, right? And it's just, you have to provide options for them to dispose of these medications. But first, you have to convince them the why they need to do it. And it's not only that these narcotic prescriptions many times are the gateway to more horrible addictions, such as heroin, but also the poisoning aspect of it and also what it does to our environment. So the concept that will be forthcoming hopefully soon in 3315 is more focused on public education at the point of sale. I do think this is responsibility of pharma to shoulder the cost of this public education. The second thing is providing kiosk at a certain ratio. I think maybe at every retail pharmacy is probably overblown. They're expensive. There's a regulatory burden. And in Central Oregon right now, we have 12 kiosks already, and maybe 30 pounds on average a month is taken out of them. So even though they're pretty accessible, they're not being used. They're not being used because people haven't been convinced of why they should use them and where they are. So I think that should be the predominant influence right now is trying to educate people of why to do it. And I think at best that this program would be administered by OHA and not DEQ. When you really look at the environmental consequences of these drugs, the vast majority of the pharmacologically active compounds that come out into our environment, specifically water, is excreted. And what we want to convince people is the worst thing they can do is to pour it down the drain or into the toilet. So either a take back into a kiosk or simply just putting it in your garbage. So the easiest way to dispose of these drugs that is environmentally sound is to put it in the garbage. That's the DEA recommendations if you don't want to go to a take back location. And you think about it, that's pretty easy and simple. So that's kind of the broad outline of what 3315 will be, and I hopefully we will be able to have a consensus bill which will incorporate all of these notions. So thank you very much. I'm happy to take questions.
I can't help but commenting on your comment that we're leading the country in the prescribing of opioids.
Per capita.
It's not accidental, I think. A generation ago, we decided the modern way to treat pain was to move from the idea that a person ought to have as much pain as they can stand the notion of the treatment of pain is really a better way to deal with several conditions. And it got this next generation of physicians more interested in the prescribing of opioids than a generation ago. It was an interesting. Now the problem is we have too damn many opioids. There's always a reaction.
It was a specific change, you know, with the emphasis on the fifth vital sign, which was pain is a fifth vital sign with the expectations that people shouldn't have pain. Pain is part of the human condition. You need to more have alternatives and help in dealing with it. You know, we had the World Health Commission that made freedom from pain a universal right. Again, you know, pain is part of the human condition. It sets unrealistic expectations. So we've learned from our mistakes. When I was a young physician just starting out, I went through training classes mandated by this august body for physicians in Oregon to prescribe more narcotics.
Yes.
So we have to be very careful about setting up treatment protocols because they change and expectations change over time.
Well, thank you very much.
So Chair Greenlick,
yes,
if I might comment about that as well. We are, our prescription drug monitoring program allows us to see how many scheduled substances are being prescribed. And the fourth quarter of 2016, it looks like we have started to decline. So we're moving in the right direction with fewer of them being prescribed. So at least that piece is going, but it has taken this multi-pronged approach. So like I say, we're moving in the right direction, but we still need additional tools.
And hopefully this committee will provide more tools with even more robust prescription drug monitoring program that will amend and give more tools to our public health experts to help with this problem.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Yeah, I have a quick question around the decline of using opioids in recent times, as you mentioned, Doctor. Does that have anything to do with the fact that we are more open to alternative medicine, such as acupuncture and other means of dealing with pain? And, you know, is that a fact?
Yes, so Chair Greenlick and Representative Alonzo Leon. We can't pinpoint exactly, but again, we've had a number of strategies. The opioid prescribing guidelines were one. Again, they are guidelines. Also, our Medicaid program has implemented things like coverage for alternative back pain therapies. So I think there's been a lot of education, a number of things that have happened at the same time. So again, it took us a lot of years to get to this problem, and it's taking us a variety of strategies to get out of it. But we're hoping that it had to do with sort of more knowledge. And also, again, it's not that we want people to be in pain, but a focus on function and what kind of alternative therapies can be given so that people maintain appropriate function as opposed to just focusing on being completely pain-free.
My wife had a hip replacement and left the hospital with 150 Percocet.
Wow.
Oh, my God. And she was still trying to figure out what to do with
it. Just don't flush them down the toilet.
I haven't yet.
We'll find a kiosk for you.
Yeah, I figured street price, we had about $30,000 worth.
Right, you
I close this informational hearing. Yeah. We're going to do a little work now. We're going to open a couple of work sessions. First work session on House Bill 2103. Madam Administrator, what do we have?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2103 had a public hearing on February 22nd. The bill, which was last week, week before? Anyway, this is the bill that is allowing licensed nurse practitioners to perform vasectomies. Mr. Chair, we have the paperwork on the bill. I have no amendments before me. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion? Representative Nois, would you like to have a comment?
I think this is a great bill, and we should pass it.
All right.
That's my comment. Do you want to make a motion?
Please make a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House Bill 2103 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nois moves House Bill 2103 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Bueller.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'll be voting no. I think this sets a dangerous precedence for men in Oregon. I think the complications from this procedure are substantial, and I'm sorry to see us making this step.
Is there any other discussion?
Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, I have been voting for increases in access to people. I was concerned about Dr. Bueller or Representative Bueller's concern. I talked with the nurses and some others about the procedures that they go through in adopting rules and regulations. And I think that they will have a policy and rules that will regulate this practice. And consistent with the testimony of the one physician who came and presented written testimony, I think there are differences in the operations that sometimes can make a difference here, and that will be spelled out in the rules. So I'm comfortable to be supporting the measure.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Yes, and I'd like to also add that it isn't any nurse practitioner who just wants to all of a sudden do this work, they have to go through specialization training. So I appreciate that additional aspect that they are going to be people who are going to have the formal training to do this procedure, and so I'm also going to be voting yes.
Representative Bueller?
Yeah, just one final comment. I think it's important that we, as much as possible, especially in healthcare, be a data-driven organization. And the best I can tell, there is no data to support or refute nurse practitioners doing this procedure. I think as much as possible, we should demand that kind of data, and we just don't have it for this decision.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. That prompts me to say why I do support this. I think you're right. The data is thin at this point. It's only one other state that does it. But what I see this bill as is permissive, because it's one of the few things that in law we do wade into the medical treatment. And I know you're always very cognizant of not having this body try to weigh in. So I see this as removing a barrier. It's a permissive. And in the vein of that, because I appreciate you bringing that perspective to this body, I will be supporting the bill.
Great. Would you call a roll, please?
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Aye.
Representative Bueller.
No.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Aye.
Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Representative Maelstrom.
Aye.
Representative Haft.
No.
Vice Chair Nose.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hayden.
No.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Nose, you can carry that one.
I'm going to, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You can do it without,
I would like to.
Can you do it without blushing?
I hope so, Mr. Chair. I've had 2 years to practice saying vasectomy in public, so we'll see.
I close the work session at House Bill 2103 and open the work session on House Bill 2673.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2673 had a public hearing, on February 27th. This provides for an alternative process for a person to change the name and or gender on a vital record. Eliminates the requirement for the courts to publicly post the court orders on the name and gender change. Takes effect 91st day following adjournment sine die. We have a -3 amendment, Mr. Chair, that has a minimal expenditure impact and a no revenue impact. And I believe there's a -4 before the committee as well, of which I don't have the.
-3 is a technical amendment that I don't have it in front of me.
I do. The -3 allows for the legal application may be heard and determined by any circuit court in the state.
Yes.
It allows for a person to request to have the record sealed. It specifies January 1, 2018 is an operative date for sections 1-5.
Well, let's start with the motion on the bill. Representative Nose?
You have to adopt the amendments.
Got the amendments.
Amendments first.
We do the amendment before we have a motion on the
floor?
Correct.
Yes,
that's
right.
Really? All right.
We're having a work session.
We're
having a work session. Yeah. So now we
move
through
the
amendment
session.
In the
yes,
bill.
You did.
All right, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I would like to make a motion to adopt the -3 amendment dated February
13, 2017. Representative Nose moves we adopt the -3 amendments dated 2/13/17 to House Bill 2673. Is there any discussion on the -3? Any objection? -3 is in. Representative Hayden?
Chair Greenlick, I make a motion to adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2673, dated 3/3/17. Is that the correct date?
That is the correct date.
3/3/17.
Representative Hayden moves that we adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2673, dated 3/3/17. Will you discuss that, Representative Hayden?
Yes, thank you, Chair Greenlee. Thanks for the opportunity for me to bring this forward when we had the bill discussed last week. This bill is designed to provide some protections for a very narrow scope of people. We were presented with 59, I believe it was, people that this might apply to, and a few more. In working on that, And from personal experience, I had asked for a little bit of opportunity to put an amendment together for adding to the foster care's Bill of Rights under ORS 418-200. Foster children have Bill of Rights, and one of the things that I wanted to add to that was the ability for a foster child to be adopted into a family to change their surname under this same process. So that is the items 4 and 5 on the amendment. There are three other items on it. Item number one is affirming that the purpose affirms the applicant's gender identity. That's what the original bill is doing. We want to make sure that this amendment is not changing that. And then in doing the work on this, we discovered that there was another very small group of people that could take advantage of this protection of not having to post in the court system, victims of domestic violence, sexual offense, stalking, or human trafficking, and is making the request because the applicant is reasonably in fear of his or her personal safety. That would include people or peoples under the protective court-ordered or court-issued stalking orders, where you go out and you say, hey, I've got this concern. So we would wrap in people that have gone out and got a court-ordered or court-issued stalking or protective order for those people. So if they want to change their vital record, that they can do so without having to post this for the 14-day period, which is currently. We believe that this is a very, very small amount of people that would benefit from this, just like the original bill is a small, again, estimated at 59 people, give or take. We believe that this would probably even be smaller than that, and are more than happy to get the minimal fiscal on this, but I can't tell you that it would be for sure because they honestly haven't had the time to process that.
Further discussion? Representative Nose?
So, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As much as I am intrigued by the ideas that Representative Hayden put in the amendment for the Dash 4, and I think there's some important things there that we ought to actually look at and look into, I'm worried that including them in the bill would it would change the purpose of the bill, make it a lot broader. I am concerned about what the fiscal might be. We've been having a lot more scrutiny on fiscals this year because of the budget challenge that we find ourselves in, so that makes me a little nervous. My hope would be, and then, you know, we haven't had a chance to sort of vet this among other stakeholders, right, because we just got the amendment, so there may be other concerns or ideas out there, and I guess I would just ask that I think Representative Hayden is on to something, and I think we should try to find we should shop this around and try to find another vehicle. So I would ask the committee to vote no, as much as I hate to say that.
Representative Hack?
Thank you, Chair. Not sure how to respond to that. Having dealt with folks, women who have been domestic, who have dealt with domestic violence, and those who have been victims of sexual assault predators, I commend you for bringing this bill forward, but I, in my heart of hearts, cannot understand why we would not make this inclusive and why one set of victims is more important than another set of victims and why we would put a price tag on that when I know that there are other things that we may make a priority. And if it is that there's a small group that could benefit from this, I don't know how we could turn away from that. And if it is a matter of we need to do a little more homework to include these people in this piece of legislation, then why would we not hold over the work session and do our work to do that rather than saying you're not important enough for us to do that? That's our job. And that hurts me to think that we would not take care of that first. You know, I didn't even know that this issue existed until this was brought forward, so I am so thankful that it was. But and that's brought about these other folks that have now come to the table and said, whoa, you know, we have had to deal with this, and they weren't bold enough to come forward where, thankfully, your folks were. And they were the voice for others that now are coming out that have had these same issues that weren't strong enough to come out and say something. So one set of victims were the voice for another set of victims, but at what point do we say you're important but the others aren't? I just...
Representative Kinnaman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciated Representative Hayden bringing this forward. And as I've been stewing about it since then, I was reflecting back a number of times when I've traveled, particularly, I guess, out of country, I've seen difficulties getting children back in. And that's a pretty traumatic and difficult thing. And also, as Representative Hack was noting, in my practice over the years as a psychologist, there were a number of special cases where I think changes like that were very appropriate. Sometimes without notice, sometimes costs were issues, sometimes I'm not sure what all the issues were, but very appropriate in their healing and their moving on with their life. I had a third point that I was going to add. But I just...
gets worse.
That's worse, too.
I say it gets worse.
Yeah, but and the third point was that I think it's highly appropriate when we're talking about appropriate, thoughtful, careful, sensitive treatment of people that we apply it across the board where we have awareness, and I find some objection to not making it broader.
Yeah, I'd like to comment. I think what Representative Hayden brings forward is very important, but I think it changes the nature of this very straightforward bill. I would commit to working with Representative Hayden to get those things into a bill. We can't find an existing vehicle. I'd be willing to give up one of my priority bills to make it happen, because I think dealing with the whole question of posting is a slightly narrower question than the question of dealing with what's in this bill, very specific for a very specific set of folks. So I would urge a no vote on the amendment. I'll work with Representative Hayden and get that amendment into statute, because I think it's an important one to do, and we'll figure out how to do it. Representative Knows?
You know what, Mr. Chair, I think you said it better than I could, so I'm going to pass.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say something similar. I'm glad you're willing to give up your priority bill before I was about to give up one of mine. But I, when I heard about this amendment right before this session today, I sent an email to Rep. Hayden about another issue I've heard that could be wrapped into another bill, which is the case of adopted parents when they want to adopt a child. We have a strange law that says you have to, as an adopted mom, put your name on the birth certificate as if you were in the room giving birth to that child. It's a crazy idea. It's a constituent of Senator Thompson and Representative Mark Johnson, and I had reached out prior to this to see if they wanted to work with me on it, and we've all gotten really busy on all of our bills, so it didn't make it into the regular session, but I would be happy to work with you in terms of vital statistics or birth records, because I do think that the base bill people have worked on for a very long time, and if there's any concern about lack of vetting, possible fiscal or anything, let's let this be, initially I really like it, but let's let it get its due vetting, and I would love to work with Representative Hayden to see if he'd consider combining that idea as an adoptive parent as well. So I think there could be a win-win here. I don't think it has to be an either-or.
Representative Hayden, last word.
Thank you, and thank you for all this support on the idea here. It is a very simple fix to a very significant problem to a very small number of people. I would love to see us just take care of that right now. I will take you up on the offer of priority bills, because it's such an important subject to move forward and to hold your feet to the fire. I will be voting no on the main bill to make sure that we are inclusive of all Oregonians, not just a small section of Oregonians.
Would you call the roll on the amendment, on the motion to amend the Dash 4 amendments.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
No.
Representative Buehler.
Yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
No.
Representative Kenmer.
Yes.
Representative Nostrom.
No.
Representative Pack.
Yes.
Vice Chair Nose.
No.
Vice Chair Hayden.
Yes.
Chair Greenland.
No. Motion fails. Any further discussion on the bill as amended with the Dash 3?
We don't have a motion.
Well, I'll make one. Yes, for more discussion.
Well, are you going to make a motion?
I was going to.
Put the motion on the floor.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we send House Bill 2673 as amended with the Dash 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves House Bill 2673 to the floor as amended with the Dash 3 amendments with a due pass recommendation.
Yes.
Representative Kenner, do you have?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think at the moment I'm going to vote no. I'm not sure what I'll do on the floor, but to
it's
me,
a courtesy no.
Well, I don't think it's a courtesy no. I think it's a discourtesy no. I really think on a bill that we're talking about sensitivity and to special concerns, that this was an opportunity that we're missing, and I just guess.
Sure.
I don't need to babble further. Thank you.
I'm not going to babble either, but I think I made my point earlier in my concerns and just saddened, but I'll have to be the same. I just, a no here on that.
We'll get the problem solved. Okay. President Buehler?
Yeah, I'm going to be voting yes, but I also feel that this is being rushed through and we're not treating all victims equally here. And I think it's not good policy making.
Final comment?
Yes.
So final comment, I just want to let folks know that the intent of this amendment was not to change, and we actually wrote that into the amendment, that we were affirming the applicants for their purpose of gender identity, that we were supportive of that, we were affirming that. And so I don't want to make this into, we tried to change it through amendment. We didn't try to change it. We tried to protect all Oregonians. Thank you.
Here you are. I respect that opinion. Can you call the roll, please?
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Yes.
Representative Buehler.
Yes.
Representative
Alonzo Leon. Yes. Representative Kenner. No. Representative Malmstrom. Yes. Representative Pack. No. Vice Chair Nose. Yes. Vice Chair Hayden.
No. Chair Greenland. Aye. The motion carries. Do we have a
volunteer to carry it on the floor? That'd be me. You're not going to ask me.
Representative Nose.
You want to come carry it? You have to vote yes. I think you have to change your vote.
Give me my amendment and I will.
Representative Nose will carry it on the floor. Close the work session on House Bill 2673. Is there any other business to be brought before the committee? We didn't have a meeting up yet, and we're going to be done early.
Well, we would have, but we had to reschedule.
That's right. We are adjourned.